You're listening to a message from Southland Church. To learn more about Southland, including our service times and upcoming events, listen to us online at mysouthland.com. Today's message comes from our executive pastor, Eric Klippenstein.
Good morning, church. It's kind of neat to see all the different places that we have in the church during these summer months for families, for kids, for grandparents and their grandkids. I keep thinking that back section there kind of looks like the first class section of airplanes. You know that section that you walk past on the way to your seat in the back? So you in the first class section, we're glad you're here. A big welcome to those here that are joining us in person, to those who are in the family room, and also for those who are joining us online. We're glad you took the time to join us this morning. And a big welcome to Stefan and Louise. They're going to be back in 2 weeks, but I know they're also joining us online as well. We appreciate you spending your time with us. And what about that camp, eh? It's amazing. I get exhausted just looking at all the things that they're doing, the activities that they're doing. I'm sure it's part of the strategy to wear them out by the evening so that they can at least get some rest. But one of the things I sometimes overlook is the very fact that we have a camp to be able to have camp at is actually a miracle. And I know that you got lots of updates as we went through the summer months in terms of the fires and how that kept circling around the camp, but it left the camp. And there's a lot of really good things that are happening at camp. You'll hear a lot more about it later on. Next week, Pastor Martin will be back again finishing up his series on loneliness. And that'll be his third part. I want to start off this morning by leaving you with a shocking fact. I grew up in a world with no screens. Some of you can relate. Who can relate? No screens. I know for some who are of perhaps the younger generation, that is shocking. You wonder what we did. We didn't even have a television. But I grew up in the country. Our family was into construction. We had devices. They were a hammer, saw, screwdriver, wrenches. We learned how to fix things. I don't know if it was just for entertainment, but we could pull carbs apart. We could fix universal joints. We could build stuff because we had not a lot of money, but a lot of creativity. But that skill set that I learned early on in life has served me incredibly well. Not all of my attempts were successful, however. Sorry, Mom, about the electric kettle. It only leaked a little bit after. I tried to fix it. Some of you will understand it was filled with Kedelstein. That means something to some of you, and the others don't have a clue what I just said. It's that calcium buildup inside a kettle. I took it apart to try to fix it, and it wasn't sealed afterwards. But I did get better in time. And that skill set learned early in life has been invaluable. I don't know if you're aware of it, but everything around the house needs to be fixed from time to time. As our kids were growing up, we had something called a fix-it drawer. Anything that was broken went into that drawer, and when I had time, I would fix it. Most things. There was one VHS tape that was in the back of the drawer. Well, hang on. Who doesn't know what a VHS tape is? Okay, it's this reel-to-reel black cassette that you could shove in. Anyway, I was supposed to fix it. By the time I got to it, technology had changed. It was no longer necessary. Speaking of repairs, last year we got a vehicle recall notice on one of our vehicles. Now that is awesome. That means they're going to fix something, and they're going to fix it for free. It's not going to cost me anything. So while that in itself is already really good, what I also like is when I go to pick it up, they've usually washed it, they've vacuumed it. It's like a win-win. And I keep thinking that when I pick up my vehicle after a warranty fix, it's going to feel like a new vehicle. It doesn't. It's clean, but it's not new. So I dropped off the vehicle, and I went to pick it up at the end of the day. Now, one of the things you have to know about our vehicle, it's not new. It's far from new. And it has a lot of miles. But it's still dependable. And I thought, well, It's good. They did the warranty work, and the service advisor said, yep, they have the warranty repair was done. And they'd also done me the favor of doing an overall inspection on the vehicle. And they came up with a list of everything that they had found that they thought ought to be fixed. And they had an estimate at the dollar of it with a dollar sign beside it. You know, that cost more than I thought the vehicle was worth. My goodness. But here's my question. How did this happen? When did the car suddenly fall apart? We had been perfectly happy with the car up to this point. It started, it drove, it stopped, it heated, it cooled in the right seasons. We had no idea that there were big underlying issues that we needed to address. Unfortunately, it seems that that situation isn't limited just to our vehicles either. I don't know about you, but it's interesting how winters work around our house. Seems we spend much of the winter making lists of things that we know we need to fix when spring comes. And we do so with a lot of enthusiasm because spring is still a long way off. We can be pretty optimistic in everything that we're going to get done. And now that we're almost through to the end of July, we're almost done our list so far. But that list always includes things that we know are needing repair, things that are wearing out, things that are rotting. If you look at your house, there's a long list. There's painting that needs to be done, flooring that needs to be done, windows to replace, shingles, eaves troughs to be cleaned, decks that wear out. Oh, and then there's flower beds that need weeding, trees that need trimming, grass that needs mowing, and then you have to fertilize it and water it so you get to mow it again. It's like a vicious circle. And then I have appliances that occasionally break down, but usually only after the warranty has expired. You know, that happened to me just the other day. We were about to run out for a soccer game, and our freezer's in the garage, and it's got a nice little thing on the front of it that says what the temperature is. And I know that it's set for minus 18, keep everything nice and cold. It showed minus 10. Well, you'd like to ignore it, but that tells you that something's going on that shouldn't be. Well, we ran off to the soccer game and came back. Now it was at minus 8. Well, that's a problem because you know it's full of food that's not supposed to perish. And I knew a couple of things. I knew, well, to get a repair guy out there, it's going to cost me $100, a couple $100 for sure, just to get him to show up. I also knew that the freezer was 15 years old, and how much do you want to invest in an old freezer? So I ran out, and I got a new one. And we shoved that into the right place, and we transferred everything over from the old freezer to the new freezer. We were good. Oh, and then I looked at the old freezer, and I noticed that actually the weather seal in the bottom of the door had fallen down and it was missing. So all the cold air was just going out the bottom. It'd be really nice if I had found that out maybe an hour earlier. So I fixed it, clamped the weather stripping back on, tested it, and now Pastor Martin has a really nice freezer that is working really good. And then, of course, I have people tell me that, you know what, you should never get rid of the old appliances. Those last forever. I have a new one, so probably his will outlast the one I just bought. Stuff breaks. And I know that you can probably identify with this. And the stuff that we have takes a diligent effort to stay on top of. A lot of maintenance. And in every situation, we're always assessing whether the things that we're fixing are worth the cost and the effort required, because you don't want to spend money on something that's not worth anything. And neither do you want to let something go to ruin that is worth a lot. Often we would like to just kind of ignore the problem and assume that it will go away. That just hasn't happened in my lifetime. I guess that it would be like when you're camping and you see a bear coming, you put a blanket over your head. And you assume that if you don't see it, it's not there. I'm guessing that will end badly for you. There are words that we use to describe this habit of not dealing with stuff. It can be called procrastination. It can be called lazy. But it can also be called neglect. We're going to look at a passage this morning that talks about this very issue. Not about the bear. It's going to talk about neglect. Proverbs 24, 30 to 34. I walk by the field of a lazy person, the vineyard of one with no common sense. I saw that it was overgrown with nettles. It was covered with weeds, and its walls were broken down. And then I looked, and I thought about it. And I learned this lesson. A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit or bear, and scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. It's important to note that the book of Proverbs is not a book of absolute promises, but rather they point out general truths or principles for life. And so what the proverb is saying is that, generally speaking, you will be better off if you work hard than if you don't. And the writer is painting a mental picture of something that speaks louder than words. He's using the illustration of a vineyard that's been left to ruin. His purpose is not to educate us on the agricultural practices of tending to a vineyard. He wants to use this picture to teach us something important for us to know. He's giving us a life lesson. So let's summarize what we know from this proverb. Well, the owner of the vineyard had something that over time he had developed that had great value. A lot of time and investment had already gone into it, and in building walls to protect it. Did you know that establishing a vineyard costs you $50,000 per acre, and that's not including the land? That's a lot of investment. And break-even typically doesn't happen for the first 7 to 10 years. But they say, statistics say, that over the past 120 years, vineyards will bring an average rate of return of 8.5%. That's not shabby. So this investment is made because vineyards are assets that are intended to produce income over the long term. It represents an opportunity to do something with a valuable resource, but it does require careful attention. The owner is called lazy and someone with no common sense. Now, we use the word lazy to describe someone who avoids tasks or responsibilities, someone who doesn't care to put in effort or shows a lack of motivation. But it can also be important to recognize that some who appear lazy might be fatigued, overwhelmed, discouraged, or just lacking direction and support. And then there's those who just couldn't be bothered to put in the effort that's required. From the outside looking in, they may both look the same. But the writer of this proverb has determined that this person has simply chosen to no longer put in the effort that's needed. Now, when it states he has no common sense, it means he's not acting in a way that most people would say is a responsible way to act. When you think of common sense, you know that touching a hot stove, it's common sense not to. You also know it's common sense not to take the milk out of the fridge and then leave it on the counter until it turns into cottage cheese. Don't ask me how I know that, but it's common sense. Neither do you go up to an angry dog to try to pet it. Common sense is the wisdom that we've gained by looking at the way life works and how it doesn't work. Common sense in this case would be that if you have a vineyard, the expectation is that you ought to put in the effort that's required to take care of it. Now, this vineyard is overgrown. It's covered with nettles, weeds. If you're familiar with nettles, those are not friendly plants at all. They're invasive. They are sharp. They leave stinging burns and rashes. They are nasty plants. And then there's weeds. I like to call these miracle plants. They don't need to be planted. They just show up and they take over. Simply do nothing. There they are, like magic. We spend time in spring planting, fertilizing, watering, and caring for the plants and flowers around our place. It takes an awful lot of effort to grow those things that you want to have grow, but not weeds. They don't need effort. They just pop up anywhere and everywhere, and you can't kill them without consistent effort. They grow and thrive in drought, in floods. It's the only thing that thrives and spreads relentlessly, regardless of the weather. They're kind of like our human nature. Paul talks about this in Romans 5:12. When Adam sinned, sin entered the world, and Adam's sin brought death, so death spread to everyone, for everyone sinned. A sin nature doesn't need to be nurtured either. It's just there, like weeds, waiting. Simply do nothing, and it will spread. If we are not intentional and consistently cultivating godly habits, like prayer, time in the Word, and growing in character, then something else will take root, and the same way spreads, the weeds spread across your yard. Things like compromise, apathy, bitterness, or distractions, or even bad habits can invade a heart that's not being actively tended. Reaching a state of being overgrown also doesn't happen overnight. Now, the walls of this vineyard are broken down. We build walls when we think we have something to protect and when we want to keep things out. But broken walls are not much better than any walls, than having no walls. Now, if you grow up in southeast Manitoba, you're familiar with beef. And if you're familiar with beef, you recognize that you can have miles and miles of pasture that are really nicely fenced. It can be 99% intact. Those beef cattle will find that 1% of broken fence very, very quickly. I don't know how they do it, but they find it in a hurry. A broken fence is as good as no fence at all. Without walls, we allow in anything that cares to come in. You know, one summer, Ange and I thought that it'd be really nice to have a garden to grow things. And so we got a couple of really big, what do they call these things, planter boxes. We planted them, things grew, we watered faithfully, and stuff was growing. We loved it, and so did the deer. You know, it's amazing. They were very appreciative. They could walk through. They didn't have to bend down. They just kind of grazed as they walked their way through it. No walls equals no garden. There's a word to describe a vineyard that's overgrown with weeds and surrounded by broken walls. It's called neglect. Now, the definition of neglect says that it's a failure to provide necessary care, attention, or support to someone or something for which one is responsible. It can be intentional, it can be unintentional, but it often leads to harm. It also implies that I have a duty to care for everything that I have been given. It's actually a steward responsibility before God. It's easy to think, well, it's this guy's vineyard. If he wants to let it go to pot, so be it. And perhaps we're thinking, maybe we can buy it for a steal when it goes bankrupt. But this attitude of it's his to do with what he wants, we often tend to think that we have our lives also. We think there are lives to live any way we please. And that would not be true. Our lives are given to us with a lot of freedom. But we are also created for a purpose. And that involves working and taking care of our responsibilities. And in this proverb, an overgrown field was a sign of moral failure to fulfill God's expectations. You'll note that after man was created, the immediate next thing God did was to give him something to do. Genesis 2, 7 through 15, God created man, gave him life, and then in verse 15, the Lord God placed the man in the Garden of Eden to tend and watch over it. We were not created to do nothing. We are created to look after all that God has given us, regardless where he has placed us. We see that also in the parable of the master and the servants. That's found in Matthew 25 and also in Luke 19. You'll know the story well. It's where the master is going away for a while, and he gives his servants responsibility of varying degrees. And he says, look after these things while I'm gone. They also recognized they would give an account when they returned. A couple of servants invested time and effort into multiplying what they had been given. One servant didn't feel it was worth the effort. When I stand before God, I too will give an account for everything that he has given me, everything that he has asked me to manage on his behalf, whether it's little or whether it's much. He has entrusted those for my time on earth. So I wonder, what is my vineyard? What is your vineyard? What do you have that's valuable that God has entrusted to your care? Is it stuff you have? Has he granted you good health? Is it your relationships? Is it opportunities you have been given? Is it positions of power and influence? Perhaps it's something else. But what have you been given? The questions I ask myself are, am I putting in the time and effort that's required to get the best out of them? Or are there areas of my life that are just, okay, because I'm not prepared to put in the effort required to make them really good? God placed me into my vineyard, and he surrounded me with things and relationships. And then he's asked me to tend and watch over them until I see him again. And so I wonder, if someone walks by the vineyard of my life, what do they see? Is it well tended and cared for? Or has it fallen into disrepair? Has it been neglected? I love going for drives, and maybe you do too. But often when you drive through the countryside, you see old, broken down houses sitting on acreages often. And you wonder, how did it get to that state? Because some of these houses, you can tell someone put a lot of time and effort and a lot of money into it. They're ornate, they're fancy, they were big. They must have been amazing in its day. And you know that somebody has poured their heart and soul into building this. First of all, designing it, and then building it. It probably housed families, entertained friends. It was probably full of life. But at some point, it began to change from being an object of pride and purpose. And now it's become what we see today. A broken down structure, broken windows, it's falling apart, birds flying in and out of the windows. Over time, something happened. And you wonder, did they notice? Was it unintentional? What caused it to no longer be maintained and valued for the purpose for which it was built? It was neglected, eventually became empty, and now is what we see today. So how does this happen in our lives? How do things move from good to ruin? How is it that people get to this point? How is it that I get to this point? Let's look at some contributing factors. One of them is what I call the drift. And we see an illustration of that in Hebrews 2. It says, we must pay closer attention, therefore, to what we have heard, so that we do not drift away. It's talking about holding to spiritual truth, but that can happen in all areas of our life. The concept of drift applies to everything. Oxford Dictionary describes drifting as a continuous slow movement from one place to another. Soon it's no longer where you thought it was. It's moved. It's drifted. Life is a current that is always taking us somewhere. In the same way, neglect happens slowly, almost invisibly, It's what happens when we stop paying attention to the things that matter. A little deferred maintenance here, no longer fixing things that need fixing, or perhaps just patching things up using the zip ties and duct tape approach. Not fixing things properly. That's why the slow drift of neglect is so dangerous. It can be a slow drift from taking care of your physical health. With health, there's things that we can't control, and there's things that we can control. It can be a slow drift into unhealthy habits, a slow drift away from spending time in the Word and in prayer, a slow drift from putting effort into our relationships with our spouse, with family, with friends. Every single area will deteriorate if it's not maintained regularly and intentionally. So are these areas of your life getting better? Are they being maintained? Or have things been drifting? Angie and I have found this topic to be quite convicting. We think we have an amazing marriage. But one of the things that we know is that we want to be intentional about not drifting. Because we know that if we're not careful, if we stop paying attention, things will begin to drift and we won't even know it. Don't assume that things will always remain the way they once were. Evaluate and communicate lots. Don't know if you can read the script on this picture. The wife is saying, "How come you never say you love me?" And he says, "I told you once. If I ever change my mind, I'll tell you." That's not communication. It's not looking for drift. So do we have any markers in our lives that let us know if things are moving? How do we even know if it's moved? What's the standard we try to measure against? And who's holding us accountable? In the case of my car, a mechanics inspection revealed that my maintenance had been drifting. But how do we assess our marriage? Do we have conversations with our spouse about where we're at versus where we'd like to be? Do you even know what they're thinking? It takes guts to have that conversation because you may think everything is awesome, they may not. Have the courage to have the conversation and then talk about, well, how do we get to where we need to be? What about our relationship with God? Do we have conversations with Him about how He sees our relationship? What is He asking from us? A really good starting point is to take a look at His Word and be in it regularly to find out what His expectations are that are already laid out there. All of life requires that we continually evaluate and make adjustments if we want to be intentional about the things that matter to us. And if we're not intentional about setting the direction of our life, we will end up going with the current. We will drift. I often wondered, why is it so easy to neglect something or someone? And I've thought of a few things. One is, there's no immediate consequences. Think of exercise. I can skip exercising for a day. Do I feel any different? Do I look any different? Feel exactly the same. That day skipped made no difference. But what if I skip a week? What about a month? What if I just give up exercise? Eventually, it will get noticed. What if I go past the recommended oil change on my vehicle? It still runs the next day. It runs the next week. It runs the next month. Maybe oil changes are overrated, huh? Thought of something. I can skip having devotions and prayer for a day, a week. Have I lost my faith? No, I'm still a Christian. But things will begin to drift. Just like in my relationships. If I take them for granted, become self-focused, ignore the need for meaningful conversations, it may not feel like much has changed. But if you note, the vineyard in this proverb also didn't change overnight. But you'll notice the words in verse 33. It says, little by little, A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and slowly but surely, things decayed and eventually fell apart. But you know what? Putting effort into things takes hard work. It takes commitment. It takes consistency. It requires actions over feelings. Now, as I mentioned before, I grew up in a construction family. And back in those days, when summer holidays hit, it wasn't summer holidays for the guys. That meant we went along with Dad to work. Three of us, some in the back of the truck because there wasn't enough room in the cab, we were intended to go and contribute. And I remember one of my jobs was shoveling gravel into a basement window. And so here I was, probably 11, 12 years old, and I'm looking at this mountain of gravel that this truck has dumped here by the window. I'm looking at this little hole, and I'm looking at the size of my spade, and I'm going, it's impossible. It's hopeless. But I didn't, and I didn't feel like it, but I did. So I started shoveling, little by little, one shovel at a time. By coffee break, I'd made a little dent. By lunch, it looked like I was making progress. By the end of the day, I was done. Had nothing to do with my feelings. Had to do with my actions. When it comes to actions, my dad once gave me advice on this. He said, when you're married, there may come a time when you no longer feel as in love as you once did. And he says, when that happens, you need to become intentional about doing the things that you would do if you felt in love. And he says, keep doing that. And pretty soon your emotions will catch up with your actions. Many times we have to do the right thing just because it's the right thing, regardless of how we might feel like it. There have been times in my life where I didn't feel like being in the Word or having my devotions. And yet, as I spent time waiting to feel like it, I felt less like it. But when I disciplined myself to do it regardless of how I felt, I began to feel like it. Those feelings began to change into desires. It's freeing to know that I can change the way I feel by simply doing the right things regardless how I feel in the moment. I can lead my emotions through my feelings or through my actions. We may also have low expectations of what could be possible. Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great, said, good is the enemy of great. And that is one of the key reasons why we have so little that becomes great. Few people attain great lives, in large part because it's just so easy to settle for a good life. Even though we may recognize that things aren't really where they ought to be, we satisfy ourselves that, yeah, but we know people that are in way worse shape. If our marriage isn't where it should be, we know people that have really sucky marriages, so that makes us feel better, even though ours is barely good. We rationalize. But we will never get great results from putting in minimum effort. Look at the things in our lives that are good. And let's determine what needs to happen to make them awesome. Sometimes we despair because the gap is just too big. We feel hopeless. And like the story of shoveling the pile of gravel, we think that, well, what's this little bit going to do? But we can't fix everything in a day. You just start, little by little, heading in the right direction. What could this look like a year from now? And at times, we just don't know where to start. When I've had large projects to work on that have a multi-facets to it, I often don't know where to start. I just look at the scope of what's required, and I go, I actually don't even know where to begin. That's the time you begin to talk to people, get their perspective. Pretty soon, you'll come across someone who can provide you with some insights into where you should start. And once you have a starting point, then suddenly, the stress goes away because you're beginning in a place. So talk to people. Get prayer. Talk to doctor. Talk to Pastor Martin. Maybe he'll be a doctor at some point. But what if today we begin fixing what's been neglected? We begin the process of repairing. It will never happen unless we start. You know, we each get one shot at life, and we know that we can't go back to yesterday to fix anything. But today, tomorrow, maybe next week, we can wake up and we can begin to put intentional energy and effort into the things that He has given us responsibility for. The proverb of the vineyard is a warning. It's a warning about what it looks like if we don't put in the necessary effort into dealing with our responsibilities. And it shows us that those are not managed well, we'll begin to fall apart. And the end result is that those things that were once productive will stand neglected and unfruitful. You know, it's interesting to hear about vineyards, about nettles and weeds, about broken walls. And I know some of you are thinking and reflecting back on your flower bed at home, and you can hardly get there to start pulling weeds. But let's look at a few questions before we leave. What areas of our life used to be healthy and awesome and have now, like the vineyard in Proverbs, become neglected and are actually in need of repair? One of the things I know by observing my flower garden is that if I'm consistently pulling the little weeds, I never have big weeds, and I never have many weeds. So in which area of your life are weeds beginning to take over? Habits, health, to the extent that we can influence it. Marriage, relationships, use of our time or attitudes. Are we giving the best that we can? You see, neglect doesn't happen overnight. It happens when we consistently ignore what we need to do. Each day we're taking steps towards some destination. The question is, which direction are we heading? Will that be towards restoring and repairing things? Or will that be towards letting things drift into a state of neglect? We get to choose, but don't wait until things are so neglected that they're no longer worth repairing. Neglect comes at a great cost. What price are you prepared to pay? I'm going to leave you with a few questions to challenge you with as you leave. I want you to take note of something within these questions. The word one. What's one area in which you need to take a change, need to make a change? What's one thing that you will do differently? See, if you look at everything in your life that may possibly need attending to, you can get overwhelmed and not know where to start. Start at one thing. But here's an important question. When will you start? It's easy to start next week. It's difficult to start today. But this may help. Who will hold you accountable? Tell someone what you intend to do and ask them to hold you accountable. We do that within Marketplace Leaders. We have action steps at the end of each week, and they ask the guys at their table to hold them accountable. And next week, somebody will be asking them about their action steps. One step. Zechariah 4:10 says, "Do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin." Embrace the power of small steps. Ephesians 5:15-16, "So be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise, and make the most of every opportunity in these evil days."
If today's message has encouraged you, please take a moment to rate us and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream podcasts. For access to previous messages, videos, and live services, visit us online at myselfund.com or download the Selfund Church app. Thank you again for tuning in to this week's message.